All right. So everybody, thanks so much for listening to Fire Breathing Rob. If you're listening to us on YouTube, which we're really trying to push, definitely like, subscribe, and share this interview with somebody that's amazing. He's going to be talking about climate change. This is Dr. George Erickson. He is a retired dentist and an author of 5 best-selling, I count that 5 best-selling pro-science books. And we're going to be talking about climate change and his new book, The Unintended Consequences. So, Dr. Erickson, thanks so much for coming on the program today. Greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I know you spoke with Bill McKibben. I believe he was a friend of yours at one time. And, you know, you've talked to him about this issue. We know he was part, for the politicos that are listening, part of the Bernie Sanders campaign. You know, you spoke about the Green New Deal, and that obviously wasn't included in the Green New Deal with the nuclear power. Why did you guys have a falling out? Was it on this specific issue?
First of all, I've never met Bill.
Okay.
I've read him. His book, The End of Nature, actually turned me on to climate change. But the problem is, Bill McKibben, in an interview with Rolling Stone, admitted that nuclear power has to be part of the solution, but he won't say so publicly. And so that makes him part of the problem. And the reason he admitted, if I go public that nuclear has to be in the deal, mm-hmm. I'll lose half of my members. So where's his allegiance? It's not to the environment anymore. It's to his organization. You will see him run away from pointed questions if you watch Michael Moore's Planet of the Humans, which I highly recommend. It's highly unfortunate because Bill could be a great ally, but unfortunately, he's changed colors.
Well, Bill McKibben, I think, and also Josh Fox, I'm not sure if you know him, he was a big anti-fracking guy, but he's had a lot of issues with women in the past couple of weeks. Actually, we're going against that Michael Moore film, like you said, and I saw that movie. It was a great film, and it does tell the truth. But these guys are, you know, they're looking out for their own interests, which, you know, what you're saying, pretty much.
Right. The Green New Deal will be green for the sellers and maintainers of wind and solar projects. Otherwise, they're an environmental disaster. Most people don't know that these solar and wind farms last about 20 years. Mm-hmm. Solar degrades at 1% per year. So they're never as good as when they first go out. They start going downhill. In addition, those solar panels have to be recycled as hazardous waste. I mean, they don't tell people this. People don't get the facts except from books like mine or books like, there's a very good one called Bright Green Lies that really rips into wind and solar. There's others, but I want to mention how all the roots of all this anti-nuclear bias. Mm-hmm. 1926, a guy named Herman Muller, an American scientist, exposed fruit flies to a dose equivalent to 1,000 mammograms in just 3.5 minutes. That's a massive dose. The people that survived Hiroshima didn't even get a dose like that. And he called it a low dose. Well, back in the 20s, he didn't know any better. His workers, his co-workers, whom he praised, disagreed with him. They said, that's not a low dose. You got to test low doses. And he said, I will. And he never did. Okay. But because he was the hot shot, he got all the press, and he went, finally got a Nobel Prize, and he went before the Nobel Committee and told all the world, there is no doubt that radiation at any level is harmful, mm-hmm. and it is accumulative. And there was doubt. He acknowledged there was doubt. So frankly, he lied. And of course, that was adopted because he was the hotshot by the Atomic Energy Commission. Mm-hmm. And those have been the standards that we've been relying on. Anti-nuclear fervor has retarded the development of nuclear power, which is carbon-free, which has worsened climate change. In addition, after Fukushima, where no one has died because of radiation, they had an overzealous, terrific evacuation. that modern science would say was 10 times bigger than it should have been. That evacuation caused 1,600 deaths just from people who committed suicide because of their fear of radiation, or they'd never see their homes or businesses again, or from people who were dumped out of hospitals onto gymnasium floors where they got inadequate treatment. The fear of radiation began in the 20s, and the Greens have used it very effectively.
What would you say to the skeptics that say, talk about Chernobyl, and there's still stuff that's not good. Growing there, period, and all the radiation there? Go ahead.
That's a very good question. That's Chernobyl, which was sold as a civilian reactor, actually it was a double hitter. It could also run to make plutonium for bombs. Every Western country considered the Chernobyl reactor unsafe. And the accident happened because that was back then Moscow put their nose in everything. Moscow ordered them to run a test with the safety systems disabled. Think of that. You run this test, turn off the safety systems. They did it. Things got out of hand so fast. And in addition, Chernobyl had no containment dome like all Western reactors have. So it was just like having a tent over the thing. So there was trouble. But in spite of hysterical predictions of millions of deaths, both the UN and the World Health Organization have verified that deaths from the Chernobyl incident have totaled no more than 80. Bhopal killed 20,000. But where is the uproar of that? The Johnston flood killed another 20,000. But where's the uproar? The problem is we're working against fear. You can't see radiation. People don't understand it. Let me add another point. We're surrounded by radiation every day. We get a lot from cosmic radiation, some from radon. The banana you eat contains potassium 40. Because of the foods you eat, you and I are radiating about 7,000 emissions per hour. And our bodies have developed marvelous repair mechanisms for any damage that radiation does. We didn't know that back then. We've only learned these things in the last half of the 20th century, way late. As a matter of fact, we have some 37 trillion cells. Millions die every day and are replaced because of our marvelous DNA repair system. Incidentally, people who fear radiation ought to know, more DNA breaks are created by the oxidation of the food we eat than from background radiation. Let me make one more point. In other words, we're bathed in background radiation. There are people in India living normal length, healthy lives with background radiation 10 times bigger than what we have here in the United States. And in some areas, 100 times bigger. And this is true in many spaces around the world. But we have had this hysteria because people don't know the science.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just kind of, and I know this is, you're going to say it's all about money of why we're not hearing this about nuclear power. Well, I mean, we've heard, I guess, in the past presidential candidates, and I don't want to dabble into politics, but, you know, we've heard President Obama talk about nuclear power. President Trump's talked about nuclear power. I haven't heard too much about Biden saying that, but the last two presidents before Biden have said they want, you know, not a one size fits all with just fossil fuels. They're talking about getting everything in natural gas, nuclear power, and then solar and wind, geothermal, and all that other stuff. Why, you know, why is that such a crucial issue? Like, I guess I should say it this way. Why did those last two presidents in Obama and Trump not really do anything for nuclear power when they've been saying that both on the campaign trail? Is it money?
I think, first of all, it's not a popular subject. Yeah. You're going against common belief. And it probably was considered ill-advised. I wanted to say something else. One of the big defects, you take, for example, solar. Let's say the solar farm has a rating of 10 megawatts. Let's say it's 100 megawatts. Okay, because the sun isn't out and it gets dark and it's cloudy and all that, and the panels aren't clean and et cetera, and they're aging. Over a year, they'll put out about 20% of their rated power. Nuclear power puts out more than 90. And that 80% that the public expects but doesn't get is made up by plants that primarily burn carbon, and that is primarily natural gas. Okay, yeah. What's natural gas? 90% of it is methane, and methane is 80 times worse as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Furthermore, our fracking, our aquifer polluting fracking, wells leak so badly, as does our distribution system, that this fugitive methane is canceling the gains we've made by cutting back on coal. We're shooting ourselves in the foot, and frankly, environmentally, getting close to cutting our throats with these environment damaging things when we choose to do them instead of using nuclear power, because, oh my, I'm afraid of radiation, but I'll go get my cancer treated with it.
Sorry, I don't know if you can see me, Doc. Yeah, I can. I'm laughing because, you know, it's what you're saying seems, you know, so easy to even think about. But it seems like people are so brainwashed with the news media and the politicians that they don't even think of this. We've had somebody on this show talk from the Huffington Post, and they actually said the same exact things that you were saying about fracking with the methane, with the water contamination, even something that you didn't bring up, the earthquakes that are happening in places that they've never happened before.
Right.
I mean, look at the earthquakes in Oklahoma. I mean, that's an extreme problem there because of all that fracking. There was never any earthquakes like that period before. So it's a total joke. I agree with you 100%. You've kind of made me a believer because, looking into you and you know, because I've been falling into that Green New Deal. We have a lot of people that watch this that are very big environmentalists, that are big Bernie Sanders people, big into that Green New Deal stuff. And I was, until actually now I'm hearing what you're saying, and it seems like it makes 100% sense.
You read Bright Green Lies and they say everything I say and more because they're focused only on green, whereas my book covers nuclear and climate change. By the way, while we're on climate change,
sure,
it's important for you to understand, this doesn't get a lot of press, but COVID is just a preamble. It's peanuts compared to what climate change is going to bring. And it's going to bring it in 15 to 20 years. We're already, as the planet warms, precipitation doesn't fall on the mountains as snow or less. And that's a reservoir to fill the reservoirs in the summer as they're drawn down. But if it falls as rain in the winter, the reservoirs are full and they overflow, and there's nothing left to back it up in the summer. People, billions of people are at risk that get their water from the Sierras, from the Alps, from the Himalayas, from the Andes, because that's the primary water source for these people. And it's going to have a huge impact.
Well, Doc, not even that. I mean, I agree with that 100%. We'll talk about that in a minute. I do want to get into the book because that's why we had you on. But there's so much to talk about climate change, and I'll get back into that in a second. But just to kind of top off what you were saying, you know, we look at the temperatures in places right now that are hitting like 110, 125 all over the country. Look at Portland, Oregon. You go back to 2020, which it didn't get a lot of press because of COVID, but the wildfires in Colorado and California, there was big tornadoes in Tennessee. There was, I think there was two of them in 2020 that hit pretty hard over there right before the pandemic and a little bit into the pandemic. So no one really spoke about those natural disasters, and even 2019, the end of that with Australia. and all the issues there with the wildfires. But no one's talked about all those issues because of COVID, and they've kind of been pushed to the back burner. But we've saw what happens with climate change at the end of 2019 with Australia, and then 2020, like I said, with those wildfires in Colorado and California, and then the earthquakes and the tornadoes in Tennessee. So it's going to get worse. I agree with you 100%. I know the people listening agree with you 100% too.
Let me give you another grim example. People talk about kind of interested in sea level rise. They admit that, okay, the ice is melting. The land-based ice is melting. It's going to raise sea levels. And then we got to do something about that. That's peanuts compared to what we're doing to the chemistry of the ocean. When you add carbon dioxide to the water, you get carbonic acid. And that interferes with the way the shell-forming organisms build their shells. You know, think of the old vinegar and chalk in the bottle, how it eats away at the chalk. Same thing. The shelled organisms all the way down to tiny phytoplankton that are the basis of the food chain and that make our oxygen, the oceans make half our oxygen, are at risk. As a consequence, the ocean's warming, a warm water doesn't hold as much oxygen as cold water. So there's less oxygen. There's less oxygen being produced. What happens? Fish die. That hurts the food chain. We depend on fish for 20% of our protein in this world. So we're changing ocean chemistry. That's our supply of oxygen and our larder of some food. And we're just scrapping it. We put 2.1 trillion tons of carbon dioxide into the air in the last 250 years. A third has been absorbed by the ocean. Two thirds is left to be absorbed. You'd think we'd get serious, but no, we're adding 50 billion tons every year instead. We're cutting our throats.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I'm going to touch, and then I really want to get back into the book, but I appreciate everything you're saying, because I'm going to touch on a couple of things that you brought up. You know, we're in Florida. I'm in Orlando, so I'm not really near the ocean, you know, sort of am, but I'm about an hour or so away.
Right. I've been there.
I went to school in South Florida. I mean, in Boca Raton. Let's just tap on that area for a minute. You look at Miami. There's all the flooding there from Miami. Look what happened to that building. Partially that was the building conditions, but partially it was because all the salt water, and it was wearing out down that building. You know, we look at the coral reefs and the Keys and all around the country, Australia too, that are dying. Right. You know, you talked about food chains. You know, we eat fish, as you said. The mercury that's getting in fish now that we're putting in our body, the plastics that we're putting in the oceans from all the plastic water bottles and soda bottles that we drink that are getting in there that, you know, can't really be broken down. The fish that are eating these microplastics, which is going back into our body. So it's a vicious circle. And I'll tap on the last thing and then you can answer and we'll go into the book, Doc, is you talked about the pollution we're putting into the earth. What about Brazil? They have a leader there that's cutting down the rainforest and that just keeps it going and going. You talk about all the carbon dioxide that gets eaten up by that rainforest. That's gone. Half of that is gone now because there's some guy that wants to, you know, make whatever the hell he wants to make over there. So it's a total disaster. And there's so much more that we can talk about in that. But, you know, final word before we get into the book, you know, all the things we've talked about with the coral reefs, the plastics in fish, the mercury in fish, the cutting down of the rainforest in Brazil. Final take on that, Doc.
Well, like I say, we're cutting our throats. It's money, money, money. I think of an old Cree saying, when the last tree is cut and the last fish has caught, we're going to learn that we can't eat money. Yeah. And before we get into the book, I want to make sure your readers realize, your viewers, pardon me, audience, realize they can download this book from my website free. The website is tundracub.com. And all I have to do is click on the image of the book on the homepage and they can download it for nothing. I've done that because I don't need the money, and climate change is way more important than me getting another's pile. TundraCub.com. Tundra, like the frozen tundra, cub, like bear cub.com.
That was Dr. George Erickson. He's on our program right now. Again, the book for people that just are tuning in, it is Unintended Consequences. Go to Tundra, TundraCub.com. Again, TundraCub.com. Get the book. It's free, F-R-E-E. No money needed. for this book. So this is a good one for us. And I know all the people that are listening right now are huge into climate change, and they definitely want to save the climate. I know we've done tons of interviews from politicians on the right side of the issue and also on the left side that are trying to solve the climate crisis. So with that said, we'll jump back into the book. So, you know, you've talked a lot about climate change, Doc. My question is, you're a dentist by trade. What made you want to get into writing about climate change? It's like a totally different aspect of life.
I've always been a science person.
Okay.
I've done bush flying in the far north. My first book was full of science history.
Sure.
And it's an avocation. And I communicate with scientists more than anybody else. So, it's been my second occupation. I owe a great debt to these people because I tell people I assembled this book from their contributions. Right. They taught me, and I'm passing it on. It's important for people to realize the reason we have to emphasize increasing nuclear power is that generating electricity in the U.S. accounts for about 20% of that has been done with nuclear power. We should be moving to 100 because it's carbon free. Mm. And one way to do it is to go to every carbon burning power plant. You take out that carbon burning furnace and you put in a properly sized modern nuclear reactor. And these new ones cannot melt down and they are more efficient. And you don't have to shut them down to refuel them because they can be constantly refueled and breakdown products removed. We had one running in the 60s, but we liked what we were doing. And you know, if people like what they're doing, they don't want to change. Right. And so the project got terminated despite the fact that it was proven safer.
How do we get people behind this idea though, Doc? Because all these people have, you know, they're watching CNN, MSNBC, yep. Fox, and those people are getting the money from these fossil fuel companies, from the solar industry, yep. and all. It's the same thing with these politicians. So obviously they're not going to be for this. They're trying to push their own agendas and where they're getting that money. My thing is the only way you're going to get good things done in this country is if you take money out of politics. But besides that, I know that's not going to happen anytime soon. You have public funded elections. Yeah. But besides that, how are we going to get the general public behind that? And even if we do that, I'm afraid because we've had general public behind a lot of things and these politicians still don't get anything done.
We need more people like you and me who are making the effort to tell the truth about this. You and me and Michael Moore and Michael Schellenberger, and a large number of people. We only have a small part of the press, and we have to use it and keep using it. Otherwise, we lose by default. It's not popular. I've spoken to organizations by Zoom, small organizations that thought they were green, but when I try to tell them the science that says they're not green, solar particular, I've been called some of the least nice names you can think of. I mean, these are ordinary people, but they are so wedded to this and they cannot imagine that they did something foolish.
Well, it's like a tribalism country right now. You're either on the left or the right, and there's no middle ground. And besides that, even if you're on this side where you want a climate change, there's been these brainwashed things into your mind so much, whether it's in high school, college, by these politicians, by the media, that there's no thought to try to explore other avenues. It's just regurgitating the same information you get from the media.
Right. There's plenty of blame to go around. For example, the Nixon administration canceled that highly efficient reactor program that I mentioned that can't melt down. And we now have those, we could have those going in 3 years if we had the proper program to fund them. And Clinton, when I asked about nuclear, said, oh, we have lots of coal. Well, thanks. You know, I mean, we got trouble in both parties because they don't do the science. They listen to industry reps, wind and solar reps, that paint the good picture and have their own engineers who are beholden to their employers.
You know, we've talked a lot about nuclear power, and we talked about how we're going to get people to finally, hopefully, agree on this and push for it. So lastly, with the book, what else do you feel like you're trying to hit people over the head with to get them to pay attention to in this book? Again, Unintended Consequences. If you go on TundraCub.com, again, TundraCub.com, get the book, Unintended Consequences. So again, Doc, for the question, what do you feel like, as far as besides nuclear power, you hope the people learn about this book?
The reason I made it free, I want them to download it, I want them to read it, and I want them to send it, forward it widely, and send it to their legislators, because those are the people who make the decisions, and they're making them only on jobs and money. Well, there's plenty of jobs and money that pay very well in the nuclear industry. By the way, back on the fear of nuclear power, there's more radiation in a can of beer than there is in the water discharged from a nuclear power plant. It's everywhere.
Well, again, people aren't educated on this because the government and the big wigs at Exxon Mobil and also BP and the rest of these companies don't want them to be educated on this because they're going to be losing money on the deal.
Sierra Club, like Bill McKibben. Sierra Club takes money from Chesapeake Oil, Chesapeake Energy, but it's an oil company. And if you offer them, if I offer them or any of my associates a presentation that I give around the country at colleges on this subject, they don't want to see it. They don't want to be bothered because their jobs depend on contributors who don't know the truth.
Well, it reminds me of a documentary I watched about food in general, and it's like the American Heart Association is taking money from tobacco, and they're taking money from Big Sugar, and that's totally not going to be good for your heart if you're smoking and eating a lot of sugar in your diet. So it just shows that the Sierra Club taking money from Big Oil, that it's just a joke. It's a scam. All these, companies and these nonprofits are you pulling over, you know, not all of them, but the majority of them, because some of them are doing good work. I want to get into the audience questions, Dr. Erickson. So my question is, for a first audience question that we've got here, we put all this stuff, it says to recycle paper, was newspapers and, you know, magazines and cans and all that jazz. With that said, some of the stuff that we're recycling, you know, they go to the picked up and they're, you know, dumped, and then they get taken to the recycling center and they end up just throwing a lot of this stuff away. So you can, you can put it in the box and recycle it, but it doesn't mean it's going to be really recycled. Is that true? And can you talk about that if you know the answer to that?
I think it's partly true. I'm not an expert on this, but from the people I talk to, if people sort the things carefully, that helps. In other words, if they don't use it as part of their, put some of their junk in there. Yeah. The most important thing that I'm aware of is aluminum cans. I think that is very helpful because producing aluminum is very energy intensive, and it's far easier to recycle, melt down, and remake an aluminum can than it is to smelt bauxite from scratch. So there's an energy savings and a carbon footprint decrease with the cans. I don't know the particulars about plastics or paper, but I can probably find out.
Yeah, because I know they said some plastics are recyclable and some aren't.
That's
true. I don't know how the heck you're really supposed to know that if you're just some Joe Schmo on the street that's just putting it in the recycling bin. I mean, you don't know that stuff. So can you talk about this? Have you talked to anybody as far as scientists that you've talked to on these books or projects in general that you've done? Any politicians or companies that you've spoke to about nuclear politics? And, you know, they've given you that good vibe to say, hey, you know, maybe we're interested in this.
It is very difficult to give. Let's say that I wanted to forward this PDF to my senator.
Okay.
As a rule, you can't put in attachments. Yeah. So you have to eat, and you, often they'll have a box you have to fill in, and you, it's limited in size, and that's understandable. So you end up talking to his clerk, his staff, and hoping they do the job and haven't been told, don't send me anything on nuclear power or on this or that. So you have to keep trying. You have to try to get coverage in the press because they do listen to a rising interest in the press.
How has the coverage been in the press? Not good or?
I'm fortunate in some ways and unfortunate in others. I live in northern Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
The largest communities in my area is Duluth, Minnesota, and right across the river, Superior, Wisconsin,
right,
which is probably 200,000. And their paper gives me extremely good coverage. Minneapolis should. But they are insular. I mean, if you're not a Twin Cities area resident, mm-hmm. your odds of being published are not that good, because they cater to the local writers. I hope going to have an article. The U.S. News asked me for 3 articles on this, and I am going to send them in tomorrow. And I hope they like them and will use them. So we keep trying, and that's all you can do.
All right. Is this U.S. News and World Report, the magazine?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I don't know. It's U.S. Oh, no, pardon me. I said that wrong. USA Today.
Oh, wow. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad I caught that.
No, you're fine. Yeah. No, well, hopefully they use it because that's a very big name paper.
Yeah.
Even if they only use one, that'd be great. But hopefully they use all 3 of them. But regardless of that, I want to talk about this issue to end off. We have 2 more audience questions left before we end the interview. I want to talk about this. We talked about climate change, and you talked really in depth about the issues going on with, you know, water and survival in general. We look toward the Middle East too. You know, we look at this country and the heat wave here. We look at the Middle East. I mean, and sometimes in their summer, you can get to the same thing, 120, 130 degrees. I remember when they were talking about having the World Cup for soccer in Qatar. And they were saying, you know, they don't know how they were going to do it because it's so dang hot over there in their summers. Right. And it can get to like 120 degrees. And how are you going to have guys that are running for 90 minutes on a field at 120 degrees and they'll last? They'll drop dead on the field of heat exhaustion.
Right. And it's going to get worse.
Yeah. So to go with that and talk about the heat, you know, the crops not growing in that area, but all over the country and all over the world for that matter. So, but especially in that area, because that's seen, you know, obviously there's a lot of wars going on there. We've seen a lot of refugees coming over into Europe. So
a lot of that had to do with crop failures because of climate change. It's going to get worse sooner than most people realize.
Yeah.
In 10 years, the thing is, this sneaks up on you, even though we talk about it. It's a little worse this year. It's a little worse next year. And all of a sudden, you look back 10 years and you say, holy cow, what happened? Well, we didn't pay attention. I want to mention one more thing that's important about the critics of nuclear power. They always turn to this issue of the waste. Okay,
right.
Hold up your little finger and took a look at that last inch that's the of your little finger. That's the size of a nuclear pellet that has U-238, is 95% U-238 that does nothing. It's there for dilution. The rest is primarily U-235. That's the potent stuff that works. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can't have a lot more than that because it's safer to work with less. And there are other reasons. That little bit of U-235 has the power of 50,000 gallons of gasoline. 50,000 gallons, the end of your little finger. And as the reactor proceeds, breakdown products accumulate in that pellet. So after a while, it's less efficient and they have to be removed. Okay. They have to be put somewhere. So they're stored on site at the plant in concrete cylinders that you can walk around with no fear of from radiation. Workers don't need any special protection. The point is, all of the, there are reactors, and Canada is using them, that can burn all of that, not just the U-235, the U-238 too. But we've stuck with this kind because we were used to it. We should be changing to modern reactors that are even more efficient. So waste is not an issue. For modern reactors, it is fuel.
I know you said it's in cement, but obviously, you know, throughout life, stuff deteriorates. Are you worried about there could be an eventual leak? You know, maybe it's not 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, maybe it's 100 years, but it could, there could be eventual leak where that's stored.
By the time 100 years passes, climate change will make that issue non-existent.
Okay.
What we need to do is to use reactors that are these modern ones I described and the ones like Canada is using that can consume that as fuel and convert it to electricity. That solves the problem.
Yeah, but Doc, wouldn't that go even 100 years? I know you said climate change would be gone and that'd be great.
Well, no, it's not gone. Climate change will bring such issues that these issues of recycling nuclear waste will be inconsequential.
Okay.
And besides, as I say, we can handle it. Mm-hmm. Use reactors that can consume it instead of store it.
But with the leakage thing, just to go back to that, and maybe I'm just misunderstanding, and I know you said the concrete, we'll say eventually the concrete does deteriorate after maybe whatever, maybe 50, 100 years, and there'll be, and there's a leak, and that somehow does get into the water system, that could be an issue though, correct?
I think that is extremely improbable. If you investigate these, read the book about waste, and find out how these are made and how the testing is done to make sure they are tight, that would not be a problem. That would be discovered quickly if it, in this event, it did happen. They have taken these things and dropped them onto big steel-like spades, and they don't suffer any damage. They've run them on railroad cars into concrete, solid concrete, at 60 miles an hour, nothing happens.
Well, no, Doc, I'm not against what you're saying, Doc. I'm just trying to make that point to be a devil's advocate. But I do want to say that, you know, to the people listening, I know you've heard quite a bit now about climate change and nuclear power in general. I say give it a second thought. We saw what happened back in 2010 here in Florida with the BP oil spill. None of these energy systems that we have now are really protective of the environment, period. I know I learned a lot from you, Doc, right now, and I'm sure the people, when they fully listen to this, when it goes on the other platforms, radio and internet and all that other stuff, will really learn this too, that, you know, about the solar energy, that I didn't know all those issues about solar. I hope people do read that book too. Again, it's free. As far as nuclear power goes, do you feel like, say we did get nuclear power and we just did that, do you feel like that would fully take care of climate change?
No.
Okay.
It's going to retard it. are at, if not past, a tipping point, but still we must do what we can to slow it, because maybe we can find some other solutions. It's our one big shot. So we should be doing it.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, they are fighting that pipeline pretty hard over in Minnesota, though, the three pipeline.
Yeah, line three.
Line three,
We we're fighting it. The reason, really, that line three is bad is that it will carry oil from the tar sands in Canada. And the tar sands are an absolutely filthy, inefficient way to make fuel. It takes five times the energy to get a useful product out of the tar sands as it does to drill an ordinary well. Because you got to mine sand. I mean, you're getting heavy trucks, shovels. Then you got to heat the sand in water to get the petroleum products out. Then you got to kind of sort them out. At any rate, it just shows how desperate we are for money, that we will go do something that's five times harder on the environment to get our product than getting it the normal way. That complex near name of the town. I've been there. That's terrible. Anyway, that complex is one of the two top polluters in entire North America. We should not be using that product, and Line 3 is carrying it.
Yeah, no, I'm hopeful. Do you think that will get shut down? I know Biden shut down the Keystone fully.
Yes, Keystone is down, and I'm glad it is. About 2 years ago, and that's where I met Dr. James Hansen, was at a trial of some people who protested this Line 3. It was held in Bagley, Minnesota. And I went there to support them in the trial. And fortunately, I wasn't needed, they were acquitted because they had not damaged anything other than to cut a lock. And what they did was tell the company, we are going to shut down this line at such and such a time if you don't, et cetera. Well, they didn't shut it down and the flow continued, but the point was made that they could do it. That was the warning. And since they did no significant damage and I think the charges were inappropriately drawn, they were exonerated.
Yeah, it's terrible. They just want to frack the whole country. And, you know, Trump said it, Biden said the same thing. So there's all these guys are the same. Go ahead.
It's now outlawed in Britain.
Oh, wow. Fully. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just recently. And in the meantime, our carbon dioxide parts per million are now at 421. And Bill McKibben was alarmed at 350, which is why he formed 350.org.
Right.
But they're now at 421 and going up because we are not changing our ways fast enough.
Before you go, I'm not going to put this in the interview, but what is your opinion on two questions quickly? What is your opinion on Biden's job on the environment so far? And the second question is, I used to hear when I was younger all this stuff about the Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore. What is your opinion on all that stuff too?
Well, in reverse order, Al Gore did a good thing in pointing out the fact that we had to do something to help the environment, stop the damage. Unfortunately, he didn't do the science that would say that the way to do it is not wind and solar. Dr. James Hansen has plainly stated, I'm quoting him, to believe that you can do it with wind and solar is like believing in a tooth fairy. So that's pretty plain. No weaseling there. And then the first question you asked was President Biden. I'd hate to have his job, but I think he absolutely must let science do the decisions, and science, not industry reps, will tell him, you've got to expand nuclear power and don't expand. And instead, you know, we closed down the San Onofre plant in California. We closed down Vermont Yankee. We just closed down, I forget the name, the New York plant, a plant in New York. That's three big plants we've closed down. The one in California had defective Japanese generators that could have been replaced at a cost of, I'm guessing here. Well, I put it this way, could have been replaced for X dollars. Instead, the green people got everybody excited and they closed down the plant for 10 times that amount of money. And they lost a big chunk of their carbon-free electricity. Yeah. Stupid, because it's these decisions are made from feelings, not from the head.
All right. Well, Doc, thanks so much again. Dr. George Erickson here on Fire Breathing Rob. And I appreciate your time.